recovered alcoholic. And bless y'all. God dang it. Let's look at 10 and 11 real quick. And this is a couple of my absolute favorites. And I think it's important that we kind of look at it. There still seems to be some confusion out there, and maybe we can clear some of that up. It's 10-step stuff. Let me just make sure we got it. I dropped my book. Continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. Didn't say if we were wrong. We said when we were wrong. Because, like, we're gonna. I don't remember anybody. Yeah, I got sober November 13, 1987, guys. So I've got 32 years. I don't remember ever intentionally going out and trying to hurt somebody. I do it all the time. Just by nature of what I'm doing or just in walking through life, I sometimes I'll be talking to Patty and and sweetest girl that ever lived. I mean, talking about a great partner. She's the best. And sometimes I'll catch myself saying something, stuff coming out of my mouth and the wrong tone. And that's like, what are you doing? Why are you trying to knock this? I mean, eighth step, ninth step stuff talks about cleaning up the wreckage of our past. Okay. But I need to keep that wreckage clean, or I'll end up, you know, getting bogged down again by all the craziness that we end up doing. Again, never intentionally did, but I do it all the time. If you look on page 84 in your book, brings us to step 10. We continue to set right the mistakes as we go along. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. We discuss them with somebody immediately and make amends quickly if we have harmed anyone. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code. Oh my God. Can y'all imagine that if everybody on this earth with this craziness that we're going through right now in this world, can you imagine if everybody would practice the 10th step on a daily basis? What a much better place we would end up living. This is not just for folks in recovery. This is everybody. It blows me out of the water. We want to talk about it, but I want to read the 10 step promises. And we've ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. My favorite. For by this time, sanity will have returned. Doesn't mean if you come into AA and you're goofy and you get sober, you're going to be sober, goofy person. Sanity is what we're talking about. It's not crazy. You're going to still be crazy. Guys, sanity that the book talks about is not about you being goofy. Sanity is the knowledge that alcohol will kill me if I put it in my system. The ability to be able to discern the difference and not ever think about taking a drink. That's sanity. We are seldom interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it like a hot flame. We react sanely and normally, and we will find that this happens automatically. Maybe I misread that. We react sanely and normally, and this will find that this happens automatically. We didn't have to think it through or get my Gorski relapse workbook grid. It just happens. Sorry for the sarcasm, guys. Please, the miracle of the 10th step. We will see that our new attitude towards liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes! Exclamation point. Sing it. Y'all want to talk about a great topic to bring to a treatment center? Yeah. How about 10-step promises? We are not even not fighting it. Neither are we avoiding temptation. Neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we've been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We're not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor we're afraid. This is our experience. This is how we react so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. Guys, I don't know. How did the ninth step promises get on every AA club's wall in the world and the 10th step promises didn't? I just don't. These 10-step promises are absolutely crazy. Yeah. tells us that we're going to recover from this. I love it that we're neither avoiding temptation. Guys, I got to tell you, my biggest bone to pick with treatment, with therapy, with everything, with bad sponsorship is this idea that for the rest of our life, we're going to have to watch what we do. See, guys, if we're doing the things necessary to stay spiritually connected, the obsession to use is going to go away, and then it doesn't matter. There's a lady in town ages ago. Mary would know her. She was here for a long time, but this lady was in there, and she would go on and on. One of her lines in there, she said, sometimes she was sober 15 years at the time. And she kept saying, she said, there's just some days that I can't walk down the wine aisle at the grocery store for, you know, just because I'm so uncomfortable. And it's like 15 years sober and you can't be around it. You're not sober. We talked about it last night when Myers and I were talking. You're dry. Guy, and if being placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected, means that I am not going to be bothered by alcohol. I'm not going to be triggered by anything. And that's where I want all of you guys to be. Some of y'all are smiling, you're nodding your head, and some of you look like I've just popped you in the nose. That's like, I'm not being critical. Just if you like being miserable, just keep doing what you're doing. But guys, come on. If we're working the steps, then all of a sudden, I love that position of neutrality. Patty and I end up, Mark is in there, and some of the guys I've met out in Vegas, and I've spoke out there a few times. I remember the first time they asked me to speak at the Las Vegas Roundup. I remember seeing it on a brochure when I first got sober in 1987. It was in the AA club, and I remember walking by and punching some guy in the side and says, can you imagine going to an AA conference in Las Vegas? It's a cool fellowship. I'm going to tell you, it's a great little conference. It's not little anymore. It's grown to be pretty big, but I was supposed to speak there in November. And of course we can't because of the stupid bugs, but maybe I can go next year. Patty and I go out there a couple times a year, go eat too much. I am a buffet whore. I'm just telling you, I'm self-disclosure. But I can go out there and eat, and we can drop $50 in the slots, and I don't have to worry about getting drunk because I am on some solid ground, guys. And thank God. That's not me doing it. That's my higher power. That's God taking care of me. And he says he will, and he's gonna. So that's what we do. A lot of times people will talk to me about nightly reviews. Folks, nightly review stuff can be in your 11-step stuff. Nightly review, the instructions in the 10-step stuff is as we go through the day, this is when we do 10-step stuff. So I'll tell you a real quick little story on it. I live in airports, and I fly out of San Antonio when we're flying. This is the longest in 30 years that I have not been in an airport. Since this shutdown stuff, it's just crazy. And I went to my last trip when I saw Jill and Jerry on there. That was the last time they're in Florida. That was the last trip Myers and I took before they closed everything down. That's about a long time ago, seems like. But going through these airports, and I know everybody in the airports, and I live in it. And I'm going through one time and I'm busy talking on my phone and in the security line, and I'm 100 things going on. I'm busy because I'm a busy man. And, you know, if I had a clipboard, I'd look busy, you know, but I'm walking through with all my luggage, and little TSA guy, you know, stops me and says, you know, we need you to take your watch off. Now I took it off, I wear this little watch right here. Myers has got a big old fancy smancy watch. This is a $35 Timex. It's plastic and a little leather band on it. I wear it so I won't have to stop and take it off. You know, it won't set off any alarm. And I'm walking through the deal, and this little guy asked me to take my watch off because something was triggering the alarm. And I get snippy with it. I was like, great. Okay, that's just stupid. That's just ridiculous. Here I am. What? I almost said something stupid like, probably has something to do with my black eye patch. There may be some profiling going on here. You know, I mean, I'm just being a horse's patoot with this guy. And he's looking at me like I just, like, what? And I held up the little tray. I took the watch off, dropped it in the tray. Y'all thought just hard enough to know that I was pissed. I want everybody to know that I am being inconvenienced is the word. And I walked through and grabbed my little watch back out on the other side, and grumbled some stupid under my breath, and walked off. And I'm walking back down to my gate, and one of the guys I sponsor called me, and a little guy in Dallas, and he calls me, and I, you know what, you know, I'm just quick with him, and you know, I've just made a fool of myself back there, and I tell the guy what he did. I says, I'm talking to him on the phone, and he says, man, this guy in TSA, these guys, you know, what do they think they are? And they're, you know, this is nuts, and I'm here, just nuts. And he gets real quiet on the other end of the phone, and he said, my. He said, sounds to me like somebody needs to do a 10 step. And I said, my, it sounds like somebody else needs to find a new sponsor. And click, hung up on him. I was just mad. Don't you hate it when your young guys are correcting you? Oh my God, you know, what a world we live in. And I stopped for a second and realized what was going on. And I pivoted around on that little suitcase, and I walked right straight back up to the TSA, to the security. And I'm walking through back on the other side, and I'm walking back into him. He's on the side, and he looked around and saw me, and he saw that I saw him. You know what I'm saying? He's like, oh, he held up his hands. Like he thinks the little one-eyed guy's going to eat his ass. And I just said, buddy, I am, have you got 5 seconds that I can spend with you? He said, I'm fixing to go on break in a minute. I'll be right there. And he did. And I sat there for a minute, and he got off, and he came over and says, what? And these poor guys, they take the heat all day long. And he came up and I said, I was absolutely wrong to talk to you that way. You didn't ask me to do anything that you shouldn't have asked me to do. And I'm going to make it right. I apologize for being a complete and total poot. And it'll never happen again. And I appreciate you doing your job. And I just want to make sure that you understand that. And he looked at me like a bug with three heads. And I was like, what? And he shook my hand right there. And I shook his and I said, you have a good day. And he said, yeah, you do too. And I got to tell you, and I turned back around and I went back to my gate. The walk to my gate the second time was completely different than the walk to my gate the first time. I wasn't carrying all this stupid baggage. All it had to do with me owning the fact, my consciousness, I treated another human being like an insect, and I had to go back and clean it up. I see this guy in the airport all the time. Sometimes I go and don't see him, but 9 times out of 10, he's working that same line. And I get in there and I wave, and he waves back. I mean, he'll go out of his way to say hi. Then I got me a new buddy in the airport, and I don't have to walk around taking all this crap on. The freedom of that. Had it not been in the book and the instructions written down, I wouldn't have done it. You know what? Exactly what Myers was talking about earlier in that 4th step. I can rationalize and justify why it's perfectly okay for me to be pissed at you for what you did. If you hadn't have done this, I wouldn't have done this. That ain't the way this works, guys. What I get to do is continue to try to clean off my side of the street. I do it with my amends that we just talked about, and I'm doing it with this 10-step business because that's exactly what we're supposed to do. Clean it up. I had a... another quick airport. I'm sitting in a Southwest flight, all turned in there, and Southwest is my airline. I fly them a lot, and I'm fixing to leave the airport. I'm running to make a connection, so I think I'm going to be late. I turned out I had plenty of time, but I'm running in there, and the people are letting the other guys off, and this big old beefy guy, he gets off out there in the aisle, and then there's two ladies sitting next to him in the middle seat and the aisle seat, and he backs up and lets these ladies through, which is really nice and really gentlemanly. But if you're doing that in an airport, stop. In an airplane, it's you're stepping on everybody, you're pushing, everybody's in a hurry to get off the plane, and he stepped on me to back up so he could be Mr. Gentleman. And I pushed him, you know, I mean, I got my knuckle in his back and I pushed him up like that. And I said, buddy, you're stepping on back up, stop. I got real loud with him in his ear because I'm a poot. What was I angry about? I wasn't angry because he backed up on me. I was angry because I was running late. Yeah. Afraid of my fear is the number one offender. Remember? Yeah. The evil and corroding thread, it's affecting my life. Anyway. I got off the plane. He walked on out. I'm still grumbling, you know, flipping him off. And I've got my head down and I'm running real fast. And I need to go to the bathroom real quick. And I pulled in and went in the bathroom and then realized, because there was a flight attendant, female flight attendant in the bathroom there. And she looks at me, she goes, whoa, whoa, whoa. And I went, oh man, I walked into the wrong bathroom. I mean, I am so distracted with my life. I mean, it's so stupid. I walked back out, went to the right bathroom, and then left, and then walked back up to the gate. I'm still grinding my teeth, and I'm sitting up there, and I walk up there, and guess who's at my gate? Mr. Big Beefy Boy. Yeah. And he's sitting down at one of the chairs, and I'm sitting over there. And, of course, my conscience, guys, this just happened a year ago. You know, I'm 31 years sober at the time, you know, Mr. Spiritual Giant, you know. And I'm rationalizing and justifying why I need to and I pull my little back. He sees me coming. He holds up his hands like that. And I says, buddy, no, I was so wrong to do that. I was a poot. And he starts to laugh, and I'm laughing about something. We start talking. He turns out to be a lawyer. And we had some stuff in common. We were just laughing. And I sat down next to him, and we visited. It was turned out my flight wasn't that quick. And we were there 15, 20 minutes, but we had to line up and got to be good buddies. I see him in the airport all the time. Clean it up. You step on somebody, clean it up. That's all the 10 steps about, guys. With your families, with your loved ones. Patty, not a week goes by that I don't know her a 10th step. I don't do it as often as I need to. That's for a fact. So I think it works good. This old 11-step stuff, guys, the really growth around this meditation, I come from a sponsorship lineage that talks a lot about meditation. My sponsor is Gary B. over in Indianapolis, and his sponsor was a guy named Paul M., Paul Martin. He's passed away years ago. One of the finest guys you'd ever come across. Paul wrote a bunch of articles for The Grapevine. He was an author. He wrote for a bunch of different magazines, but he wrote specifically for The Grapevine some really good 12-step stuff. He got sober a long time ago. He used to sit and watch wrestling matches with Bill Wilson and Lois in his house back in the day. I mean, he was around in the early days. And Paul Martin, anyway, he wrote some great articles specifically on meditation, talking about the 11th step being the forgotten step. Everybody, I can't say everybody, I would bet 90% of the people in Alcoholics Anonymous play lip service to the 11th step. You know, did you get quiet with God? Did you meditate in the morning? I mean, most people don't. They get in a hurry. You'll follow, maybe stop at the light and, you know, get a little prayer. God, don't let me die today. And then move on, you know. But the meditation that some of these articles are great. I can send them to you. But Bill Wilson wrote some pretty good stuff. I always thought that what we do, what we hear in meditation, a lot of y'all that went through treatment, I'm sure you went through some meditation classes. The meditation back in the day when Bill Wilson wrote the big book didn't mean the same thing that we give it today. The dictionary in 1938 dictionary talks about meditation as thoughtful contemplation. Now today, a lot of times what we do in meditation, we'll teach, and there's nothing wrong with it. There's different meditations. There's transcendental meditation. There's lots. Bill Wilson learned transcendental meditation right before he died. I got great articles that talk about him. He was so excited about finally learning this method of meditation. And I knew the guy that actually taught him the meditation. It's a pretty fascinating story about Bill Wilson. He was real sick, and he claimed that this helped him a lot in his last days, was that meditation. But this idea of getting quiet and leaving your body and going to the astral plane, and you know, and that's a form of meditation. That's not what Bill Wilson was talking about when he wrote it in the big book. He wants us to think about our day ahead, to contemplate what's fixing to come down the pike. Just like Myers was talking about earlier today, guys, there's so much stuff going on in our life. And if I don't get quiet and get centered and remember what's important in my life, then pretty soon what I'm doing, like usually about 5 seconds after I drive out of the parking lot, I'm flipping people off on the road. I'm tailgating the guy. Come on. Isn't that funny? If he's driving too slow, you know, I'm mad. If he's driving too fast on my butt, I'm mad. You know, it's just the whole purpose. It's nuts. Contemplation, guys, is I'm going to get quiet with God and I'm going to ask his guidance. Here's the piece I want you to see. Some of the techniques about meditation or can be quite a challenge to learn. There are some processes out there that take a lot of discipline and a lot of time. Any type of meditation takes discipline. we hear the old timers used to refer to this 10, 11, and 12 as the disciplines of 10, 11, and 12. It takes discipline to stop during the day and go clean up your mess. It takes discipline to get quiet with God in the morning or at night and spend some quiet time. And it takes discipline to go work with others. We'll be talking about that next hour with Myers. And it takes a little effort. This guy that wrote those articles, Paul Martin, he meditated 45 minutes, an hour and a half a day. It was 45 minutes in the morning, 45 minutes in the evening. The longer you can spend in that quiet time. But I got to tell you, he was one of the most connected guys you'd ever come across. And when I actually started, I'm terrible at nightly reviews, guys. I don't do it as often as I should. But I got to tell you, guys, I don't miss any time to get quiet with God in the morning. Patty usually sleeps a little later than I do. I get up, get ready for work, sit right here at this desk right here, surrounded by all my AA stuff. And just, you know, it's a good place for me to get quiet. And I can open my little window and smell that southern breeze coming off the Guadalupe River. And I get quiet with God. And I ask God's guidance. It's in that quiet that you're going to know God's truth. It's in that quiet that you're going to get the guidance that you want. And the point I want to make is that you don't have to wait till you're sober a bunch of years to start getting guidance. Again, I've worked in the treatment business for years and years and years, and I've watched people sit in treatment and start getting guidance. Bill Wilson says you're gonna. And this idea that you have to wait a long time for this to start happening. I take the booze out of my system and I get detoxed. And then I start doing the things that the 12 steps are asking me to do, there is going to be a connection with a power greater than myself. Like we were talking about earlier, Myers was talking about in 2 and 3, I don't know what that face looks like. I think I'm clearer today than I was 32 years ago. But it's still my idea of what God is may be different than what Myers is. I think we're heading in the same direction, but I don't know. As I did the work, I started getting, the book says we will intuitively know how to handle certain situations. And I think people read that like it's just rhetoric. The truth of the matter is, you will intuitively know how to handle certain situations. You know, it's like you do something, if you're meditating on a regular basis and you do something stupid, you'll know it. Nine times out of 10. How many of y'all have ever done this? You'll be sitting there in meditation. You'll be getting ready for your day. And all of a sudden this name will cross your little mind. I give this analogy all the time. This happened years ago. It continues to happen on a real regular basis. I'd bore you to tear if I told you every time one of these little miracles happened, but I'm sitting there and, there was this young guy that hosted me out at a conference out towards California, and he was the nicest young man you'd ever come across. It was the longest committee dinner I'd ever been at. I remember that about, that's all I remember about the talk, is that the dinner was arduous, to say the least. And I remember him like it was that. But anyway, I hadn't thought of him in ages. And I was sitting there, and I'm getting ready for work, and all of a sudden his face crossed my little mind, and I'm thinking, God, I wonder how he's doing. Anyway, and I got to work, and I made time to track his number down because I save y'all's numbers. I just do. And if you're a big book thumper, you're probably in my, a lot of y'all in this room are in my database. And I tracked him down, like, and I called him on the phone. And there's an hour difference between us, and it was earlier there and when it was for me. And I called him, got him on the phone, and I said, hey, this is Chris. How you doing, buddy? And it was just silence on the other end of the phone. And he says, is this Chris Raymer? And I said, yes, of course it is. How you doing? And he got real quiet again. He started crying. I said, bud, are you okay? He said, can I call you right back? And I said, absolutely. Pulled off the side of the road and waited. And he called me right back. He said, why did you call me? And I said, buddy, you just crossed my mind. I was just thinking about you this morning. And I said, what's going on? He said, you're not going to believe this. I don't go to AA anymore. And I said, oh, that's not good. He says, you know, I had a little battle in the AA group. I'll tell you what it was. He introduced himself as a recovered alcoholic. He had a couple of years of sobriety. And some old bastard in the meeting ate his butt about it, even though it says on the title page that we can recover from alcoholism. dozens of places in the book it says we can recover. He introduced himself as a recovered alcoholic, and this guy embarrassed him in a meeting and dressed him down. And he said, you know what, I don't need this. And he left. See, the problem, though, is he needed that fellowship as much as that fellowship needed him. And I encouraged him to go back. I encouraged him to clean up his mess. He had a fight with a guy in a meeting. He made a fool of himself. Okay. And he did. He went back. I talked to him a couple of days later. I checked on him. He says, man, it's all better. I'm back. He says, I sure appreciate it. I was about this far from taking a drink. And I went back and I made amends to the old guy, and everything's okay. I'm going to be all right. Yeah. All right, guys. I could beat it. Y'all understand. I've seen this 1,000 times. We're in the world to play the role he, capital letter, she, whatever it is, assigns. God, we keep going back to the same stuff. We've got to stop presenting this program as just a way to not drink one stupid day at a time. This is a way of life. This is a way of getting connected. Man, because I listened in those quiet times with God, I ended up, God, working where I want to work. I ended up being with the person I want to be with. You know, my creative juices get stick. I get to do some cool stuff with my life that I never could do before. God's going to guide you. I don't know what God's got in store for anybody in this gathering. There's what, 575 people in here now? I don't know where God's got. I guarantee you this. I know God wants you happy. I guarantee you God wants you happy. And some of us are not happy because we've kind of lost our way. We've compromised ourselves. We've compromised ourselves. We've compromised ourselves. And before you know, you look up and the life that you're leading is not the life you're supposed to lead. You know, I got to say it while we're on this topic. My friend Charlie says it. The 11th step is not extra credit. You know, it's stuff that we're supposed to do on a regular basis. But if you will actually do it, it takes a little effort. There's a great little document called How to Listen to God. And if you, I can send you a little handout that comes with it. I'd be more than glad to do that. You can buy the book. It's also titled from that Oxford Movement. It talks about how to meditate. And it gets some great little pointers. I learned with an egg timer. Right now on the phone, there's some great meditation websites in there. You can get on there and click on that website and meditate with 200,000 other people at the same time. It's pretty powerful to sit there and get quiet with that many people, and because that shows that how many people are online. But it's in that stillness, and it takes time. Guys, you'll get quiet. And all of a sudden, the guy will start the lawnmower next door. You'll think about the lawnmower. Okay, that's fine. You know, then just acknowledge it and then go back to what you were doing. You know, just go back. And pretty soon, everything cuts out and you're just focused on the things that are important. It's just, it takes a little practice, guys. But if you'll do it more than once every 6 months, it's pretty easy. You'll find that you get pretty good. And I don't care how long you do it, guys. My meditation is always about 10 to 15 minutes. You know, it absolutely helps me get through the day. I mention this real quick because I see it a lot of times with the guys I sponsor. There's a little article out there, guy, and I can send it to you. It's not in the big book, but it was written by a lady, and she's dead now, but the article is still available out there. But it's called "Thank God for Your Discontent," and one of the things it talks about is I see so many people in AA that are not drinking one day at a time, but their life's miserable. And they're constantly in a battle. You know, they're fighting the relationships, or they're fighting finances, or they're fighting, you know, just the kids, or just, it's just something's always going on. And it's like, guys, life is tough sometimes, but it doesn't have to be that big of a battle. And part of this article, "Thank God for Your Discontent," is that maybe, makes me want to cry, maybe God's trying to show you something. Yeah. I'm going to tell you, I don't remember ever growing spiritually around something that happened good. I grow spiritually by getting through the adversity. You show me somebody that beats cancer, and I'll show you somebody that's spiritually connected. You show me somebody that's been through a nasty-ass divorce, and I'll show you somebody that's walking in rarefied air. Thank God for your discontent, because maybe it's that discontent that you need to start talking to God about and finding out why it is once and for all that you're in this situation. God's not putting you in this situation. You're there. Okay. Reason I'm saying, so you sit here and you start figuring out in this quiet time, you start figuring out what is it that's really important to you. Again, when your insides are not matching your outsides, there's going to be conflict. You got it? Okay. So you're sitting in there thinking, and all of a sudden these thoughts start coming. I'll give you an example real quick. When I left this place, I'd worked there 17 years, and I left. I went to work for a fine facility down on the coast, and Myers and I worked together for a long time down there. And it just, some of my best friends on earth still work there, still live there. It was a tremendous facility, but I'm away from home. I'm away from the outpost, my home group, a lot. I'm literally weeks away from the hill country at times, and I kept thinking. Always, I'd go out and run. I'd get on my bike and do whatever, and I kept thinking about coming back to the hill country. And I finally had a conversation with Patty, and Chris knows her, and I had this conversation. I says, I'm thinking I want to come back to the hill country. I'm an executive at this facility. I'm making big money. I'm a vice president. And I'm thinking about coming back, and I'm going to get this job at this place I used to work. I'd have to take a big old cut in pay, but I think it'd be worth it. And Patty looked at me like, what? What are you, what? And we got to talking, and I explained it to her. And she said, absolutely. She said, you do what you got to do. I support you. Thank God. And I quit that job and I moved back to the hill country. Y'all know how God does this? Yeah. And now about a year and a half later, we're in the middle of this coronavirus crap. I'd have been in trouble having to get on an airplane and travel to work. But I'm 7 miles from my job. I can drive there. I don't have to get in an airport anymore. I don't have to travel as much. God's all over this stuff, folks. God just continues to guide us. But looking at this stuff that we're supposed to do, folks, I got to wrap this up. It's just some of the hardest decisions that we make. Y'all think the hardest decision is, I don't want to drink anymore. That's not a hard decision. All you got to do is make a decision to turn your will and your life over to the care of God. It's called a third step prayer. Bill Wilson refers to it, the decision, all the time. And then you do the work and you're going to get connected. And then it's about God showing you what you're supposed to do. Folks, I talk to people every day, emails, texts, all my calls. I talk to people every day who are not drinking one day at a time and miserable. And you talk to them and it's like, yeah, but I can't do that. You're so quick. What do you really want to do with your life? I've said this in 1,000 talks I've ever done. Buddy, this is not a dress rehearsal. All of us in here, who knows how much longer we got? I don't know. If I get sick tomorrow, I don't know. I just know this. It's not okay that I'm miserable. It's not okay that I'm working at a job that I don't want to work at. I don't care. I don't care how you got to, you owe everybody. No, if you have to work someplace to make this amount of money, you're living beyond your means. Start selling some shit. Back up a little bit, guys. God doesn't care what kind of house you live in. Yeah. You're no warmer in a $5 million house than I am in my little 700 square feet rock house on the river. It's just the nature of the beast. And I don't owe a soul in this world. Yeah, there's some freedom in that, guys. There's just some freedom. It didn't happen overnight, but I didn't want to be in debt. All of a sudden, you start meditating, praying, and God starts guiding you what you're supposed to do with your living. Go back to school. We talked about it last night. Man, learn to speak some languages. I hear people in AA all the time, I'm bored. You are, because you're boring. Nobody wants to go paint a picture because they're afraid it won't be a masterpiece. It probably won't. Practice. Yeah. Me on a bike. I wouldn't ride a bicycle for years because I was afraid of what I'd look like. I look like a little skinny old man on a bicycle. So what? I love it. I love it. Go do some cool stuff, guys. Paint some pictures. Learn, write some poetry, for God's sake. Go do something that makes you excited. I'll ask you the same thing my old sponsor asked me one time. When's the last time you stayed awake half a damn night past your bedtime? You just could not go to sleep. Not because you drank too many freaking energy drinks, but because you were excited about a project, you know, a little research you're doing, or you're writing a little book, or you're doing something that you're really excited about. When one boring day after another boring day after another boring day. Guess who's going to relapse soon? Guys, it's never about how far you are away from the last drink. It's how close you are to the next drink. And if you don't get to a place where you can get happy, folks, and I believe that's God's intention for us, you're going to be in trouble. You know, I don't want to make this sound like a Tony Robbins talk, guys. I just like, God dang it, guys. I just see a lot of people that are not challenging themselves anymore because they've been told they're stupid or they're too old or they're this or that or the other. It's just time to stop listening to that crap. That spiritual warfare that always wants us to keep us dampened. I don't know. I'll say this and let you go. I was doing a retreat up in Denton one time at a monastery too. And there was a Jesuit priest that was leading the retreat. He was in the program and a wonderful man. Golly, he's long passed away. But one of the things he asked us in that retreat, there's like 185 guys in there. I forget how many, there was a bunch of them. And one of the things he asked, he said, do y'all believe that the dark side, Satan, the devil, whatever you want to call it, do you believe the dark side wants you dead? And all the hands of the place went up. Yes. And he said, no, that's not true. He said, the dark side wants you ineffectual. Isn't that a great word? Ineffectual. The dark side wants you sitting alone by yourself in an apartment, house, whatever, afraid, bored, not willing to help anybody. Makes me want to cry. In 1987, November, that's where I was. Sitting in a little apartment with two stinky ferrets, reaching in a medicine cabinet to pull down two bottles of pills. Not because there's no love in my family, not because I just feel useless. And it was folks like y'all in Alcoholics Anonymous, folks exactly like a bunch of y'all here, that got around me and started pushing me towards the light and explained real early on that this wasn't about just not drinking. This was about getting happy. This was about being effectual. I'm so grateful they did. I'm so grateful that I've surrounded myself with a whole bunch of folks that will continue today to challenge me to do better, to challenge me to be more. And this is all stuff that comes from what we're talking about here in that meditation piece. It's really important, guys. Bless y'all. I appreciate it. We'll talk to y'all in a little bit. Thank you.